Bibles, turn to John chapter 11 this morning. John chapter 11. We're going to begin reading in the first verse. Gospel of John chapter 11. We're going to read verse 1 through verse 46. So a rather long passage this morning. Beginning in verse 1, "Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus, of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary, which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When he had heard that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that, he saith unto his disciples, Let us go into Judea again. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? Jesus answered, Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, Our friend Lazarus sleepeth. But I go that I may wake him out of sleep. Then said the disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. Howbeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest in sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, Let us also go, that we may die with him. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh to Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou had been here, my brother had not died. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus saith unto her, Thy brother shall rise again. Martha said unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this? She saith unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then which were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary that she arose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, She goeth into the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled, and said, Where have ye laid him? They said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then said the Jews, Behold how he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man, which opened the eyes of the blind and caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus therefore, again groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, "Take ye away the stone." Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, "Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days." Jesus saith unto her, "Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God?" Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I knew that thou hearest me always, but because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me." And when he had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth." And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus saith unto them, "Loose him and let him go." Then many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Jesus did believed on him. But some of them went their way to the Pharisees and told them what things Jesus had done. Now that's a very long passage. It's also one that we're very familiar with. This is one of the stories in the Bible that probably most people are familiar with. And I loved what one of the commentators that I read, what he said about this. He said, "Oh, how I wish that we could read this as though it were the first time we'd ever heard it." Because as we're reading, we know the end of the story. And it kind of takes a little bit away from the beginning of the story. So as we go through this passage, I would encourage you, even though you know the end of the story, let's be faithful to read it one section at a time and see what it is that really takes place here. Now, we have seen some amazing miracles from the Lord up to this point in the Gospel of John. In our study of the Gospel of John, we saw Jesus turn water into wine, right, at the marriage that he attended. We have seen him heal the blind. We have seen him feed 5,000 people with just a little bit of food. But there's been some amazing miracles, and yet nothing like what's going to take place in this chapter. And the time had come for that to take place. So what an amazing story this is. The title of the message is A Glimpse of Divine Power. A Glimpse of Divine Power. In John 11, 1 through 46, we hear this story of Lazarus and Mary and Martha and of Jesus. Those are the main characters in the story. So there are a brother and two sisters, and then Jesus and, of course, his disciples with him. So our first point is Jesus loved his friends. There's a lot in that statement, actually. But Jesus loved his friends. What an amazing thing it is to think about that Jesus had friends. In his humanity, on the earth, as he traveled and ministered here on this earth, he had friends and family and others that he loved, just like you and I. And Mary and Martha and Lazarus, as we will see and pull out from this passage, were Jesus's friends. That's an amazing thing, isn't it? Now, all of God's children are the friends of Christ, right? But in a natural sense, can you imagine what it would have been like to be the friend of Jesus while he was here in had a human body? And they were the friends of Jesus. In the very beginning of the chapter there, John chapter 11, when we first kind of understand what's going to happen in this chapter, a certain man was sick named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. So we're introduced here to all of the characters that are going to take place here. And it was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. So there was a special bond or relationship between these individuals. It says in verse 3 that therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, "Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick." So Jesus here loved Lazarus. And then in verse 5, it just comes out plainly and says in verse 5, "Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus." So it's hinting at it. It's pointing forward to some things that are going to take place. And then in verse 5, it just comes out and saying, the striking thing about verse 2 is it's really interesting to think about this. John is referring to something that hasn't happened yet in the Gospel of John. He's pointing forward to chapter 12, where Mary is going to do what he says here in John chapter 11. She's going to anoint the Lord and dry his feet with her hair. And he says, that's the one I'm talking about, and I'll tell you about that later. And he's going to in chapter 12. But he points forward because he wants us to understand this relationship that Jesus had with Mary and Martha and Lazarus. And so that's the point of him pointing forward to what he's going to explain to us in John 12:3. And we'll get to that in the next chapter. So that's the first instance in this text of how Jesus is going to draw out this special relationship that Jesus had with this family. And so we see here that Jesus had friends, and he loved his friends. He loved them in a special way. Another place that we see that, going down in the chapter to verse 33, When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. So when he saw Mary weeping, it troubled him. And it made me think of the text in Romans 12:15, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Now, Jesus knew what he was going to do. I think we understand that. I don't think I have to do a lot of teaching on that here. Jesus knew that he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. He knew that not very far from his meeting with Mary and her coming up weeping and saying, I wish you were here, that he was going to, and I guess in a very crude way of saying it, he was going to fix the problem. And he knew that. So then why did Jesus weep? He wept because he loved Lazarus. He knew what Lazarus had been through. He wept because he loved Mary and she was grieving and he knew what she had been through. He wept because of the relationship with them. So Jesus loved his friends. And that's an amazing thing for us to see. And as an example for us, the question that I asked myself was, do I have those kind of friends? Do I have those kind of friends? And the answer is yes, I do. Have you ever been through anything really tough in your life? The loss of a loved one? We have to remember that this is where it becomes important, what I told you in the beginning. We know the story. We know that eventually Lazarus is coming out of that grave. And I cannot imagine the rejoicing that took place. It's not recorded, but I think you can just imagine that when he came out and everyone really realized that he is alive again, there was probably some great rejoicing. But can you imagine the scene 4 days earlier? Jesus didn't come. He wasn't there. He didn't heal Lazarus. Lazarus died. And they thought Lazarus was gone. And if you've ever been through that, that's hard. Those are tough things. That's a hard thing for us to go through. So in that moment, they didn't know. So as friends that are that have a relationship with each other, we go through hard things with our friends, and we go through those things that we can rejoice in. Rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. And Jesus was an example to us in that. Now, the kind of friends that we have, I think it's the hard times that reveal the type of friends that we have, right? Have you ever been through any major trouble in your life? Major, I'm talking a major, big like life event where either something really bad happened in your life. What my mind went to was church trouble. We went through some pretty major church trouble, and I'll be honest with you, it really kind of made my family stop and think about who our real friends were. who are the people that are going to stand up for what is right and are going to stick with you? What about a time, even if it's something that does go wrong in your life, that is your fault, that is wrong that you do? We've all done that, right? We've all made mistakes. Are your friends the ones who are just going to say, well, so much for them, and walk the other way? Or are they going to weep with you and try to restore you? That's the type of friendships that we want to see. And so Jesus, when he comes, he wept with his friends for them, even knowing what he was going to do and even knowing that he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. So what an amazing thought there, that Jesus had friends and that Jesus loved his friends and that he cared for them. And then an amazing thought that we can say, Jesus is our friend. Even though we didn't live with Jesus and he didn't come into our house like he did Mary and Martha, you remember back in the Gospel of Luke, and when he came in and Martha was busy serving and Mary was at his feet learning, and there was all of that dynamic going on there. Even though he didn't come in our house and teach and sit down with us, we can still yet say that Jesus is our friend, that he is the friend of sinners. What an amazing thing that is to say. Now, secondly, what we want to see, first point was Jesus loved his friends. Secondly, sometimes his love is hard to see. Now, we've already kind of, in some ways, pointed this out, but we're going to dig into that a little bit deeper. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, this is a different translation I want to read to you. I think it really focuses on and points out what I want to pull from here. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Now, does that make a lot of sense to us? We just talked about how much Jesus loved Lazarus and how much he loved Mary and Martha. And so Mary and Martha send a message to Jesus and say, Lazarus is sick. So at that point, we know it was something serious, right? I think they knew that this was a major sickness and that he likely was going to die. So they send message to Jesus. So from our perspective, if we really believed that Jesus really loved Lazarus and Mary and Martha, what would he do at that moment? He would drop everything and he would immediately go straight back to Bethany and hopefully get there in time to heal Lazarus before Lazarus died. But when Jesus heard that Lazarus is sick, what he said is, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. And he stayed 2 days longer where he was. So that's very hard for us to understand. It really, humanly, doesn't make sense. But what we need to understand is the first thing that Jesus does is he connects the news of Lazarus' sickness and impending death with the glory of God. Isn't that an interesting thing? That's what he tied it to. Not even to his love for Lazarus. That's not the first thing he connected it to. He didn't say, well, I love Lazarus, and I want to go to Lazarus. He connected it immediately to the glory of God. And we need to do the same in our life. He put it, the relationship of himself to Lazarus and Mary and Martha connected to the glory of God. And the truth is, anything that we preach, anything that we go through, anything that happens in our life, any relationship that we have, anything that we teach out of the scriptures, all of those things is all about the glory of God. That's what's paramount. That's what should be our first thought. And Jesus immediately connects this to the glory of God and to the glory of the Son of God, who's going to be glorified through this situation. So in kind of paraphrasing, it's almost like he said, well, everybody needs to take a deep breath and pause for a minute. This is going to be to the glory of God. And so I'm going to stay here 2 days. Well, I guess in our human minds, what we would think is, okay, well, then Jesus is wise and he knows all things. So what's going to happen is he's going to stay 2 days. Lazarus is going to remain sick. He's not going to perish. And Jesus is going to get back just in time. And Lazarus is going to live. He's going to heal him. Once again, that's not what happened. That's not what happened. And Mary and Martha knew that he got the message, right? They knew that he knew, and they knew how far away he was. And yet he stayed 2 more days. He said, this illness does not lead to death. So if you took that verse out of isolation, what would you think? You would think, well, Jesus didn't know. He just didn't know Lazarus was going to die. So he said, this illness does not lead to death, that it is not. Let's get the actual wording there in our passage. When they come and they send this message to him, he says, let's go back and find it. In verse 4, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. So now, is that a false statement? Well, no. Because what's the end result? Lazarus does not die in the end, right? That's one way of looking at it. The second one is that it's talking about the purpose of this sickness. The purpose of this sickness is not that Lazarus dies. The purpose of this sickness is that the Son of God would be glorified. That's the purpose. So once again, this tie, close tie to the glory of God in all of these things that he says. It reminded me very closely of what we studied in John chapter 9. You remember the man there that was blind and Jesus came to heal him. And what did the disciples ask of him? They said, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents that he was born blind? So they're looking for purpose, right? What was the purpose? Why was he born blind? And they only gave Jesus two options, which, you remember when we studied that, we said that's never a good idea. It's kind of like they put a framework up and said, Jesus has got to be one of these two things, and we know that. So which one is it? Did he sin or did his parents sin? And Jesus said, none of the above. You know, like on those multiple choice tests, always be careful of that, kids. That last one, none of the above. It was none of the above. It was none of those things. And the purpose was actually for what? The glory of God might be displayed in him. That was how it was worded there in John chapter 9. It was neither that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. So very similar in the wording and the purpose there in that story as well. The same is true with Lazarus. Lazarus is going to die, and Jesus knows he's going to die, and yet he stays. He stays where he is for 2 days, and it's all about his glory. That's why he stayed. So John the writer is writing this, I think, to even help us come to terms in our own experience with what the love of God is like, even for us in our daily lives. What is it like to be loved by God? Well, even though love is a major theme in this, we've already said it's not the major theme. The major theme is the glory of God. So that's what we have to reconcile in our own life when we talk about the love of God for us. So when you're going through something really hard, or maybe a young person in your life that you wouldn't expect to die at a young age, and they have cancer and they pass away, and you just wonder, how could God love me and let that happen? It's for his glory. That's the answer to that question. And that's hard for us to see on this side of glory. But it's for the glory of God, and that has to be paramount. That just because things happen in our life and God allows them to come into our life does not mean that he does not love us. This chapter proves that to us. It says it again and again and again. Jesus loved Lazarus. Jesus loved Mary and Martha. He loved them. He wept, and yet Lazarus died. And they had to go through that. So you say, well, that's fine, but see, he fixed it in the end. Does that mean that Lazarus didn't have to go through death? Lazarus died. Really, physically died. He didn't swoon and get put in the tomb, and he was technically still alive, and then Jesus just woke him up. He died. His family saw that. Mary and Martha would have been there with him, going through that with him. If you've ever been through that, that is a very hard thing to watch a loved one die and pass away. That's hard for us. Even though we have confidence and even though we have hope, let's not minimize what Mary and Martha and Lazarus went through in this text. It was a hard thing. And yet, Jesus loved them. And he loved them through all of that. And he loved them in the fact that he waited 2 days. That was his love, that he waited 2 days. That is such a hard statement for us. It's easy to talk about it about Mary and Martha and Lazarus and Jesus. It's harder when we put it into our own life, into our own circumstances. So I guess the way to say that would be, what if Jesus waited 2 days in your life? Would you still trust that he loved you? Would you still say that's for the glory of God? It's for the glory of God. What a hard thing. What a hard lesson for us to learn. Now, like we said, we might not think it's that bad because we know the end of the story and we do know what's going to happen. But we said Lazarus really died, and death is hard. It's hard for the one going through it. It's hard for those who love them. And he really died, and his sisters suffered in that. So this is the love that didn't save in this instance, right? It's the love that didn't pull us out. So when we're going through a trial, we think, well, if God loves me, he's going to pull me from this. He's going to rescue me out of this. And when we find in James chapter 1 that we can have joy through trials and that we're not to try to come out of those too early, why does James say that? Because God had a purpose in it. He has a purpose for us going through that. And why is the purpose? The purpose is because he loves us and he wants what's best for us. And many times we would not choose that which is best for us. It's very similar to a parent and a child. You know, children think that parents just love rebuking them, and that's our favorite thing to do, is to just deny things to you and tell you what is wrong, and that's where we get our joy. No, it's not. Where our joy comes in is that we want to teach you what's right. And sometimes that takes the things which seem to us to be negative. And it's the same with us as God's children. Many times his love for us, he waits 2 days. Because of his love for us, Lazarus dies. And they go through all of that grief and all of that pain and all of the mourning that they went through there. What a hard lesson for us to learn, and yet what an important lesson for us to learn. So what we see in this passage is glory through death. John intends, and Jesus intends for us to see from this passage, for everybody who reads this, to apply it to our own experience. That even though many times these things happen, it's not that God's not in control. It's not. Did you know that Jesus didn't even have to go to Bethany? Did you know that? You know, there wasn't a distance issue. It wasn't that, well, Jesus didn't have a mode of transportation that could get him there fast enough, and therefore Lazarus died. He could have spoke the words from where he was standing, and Lazarus would have been healed. It wasn't an issue of transportation. It wasn't an issue of lack of power or of bad circumstances. Did you know that circumstances are irrelevant to Jesus Christ because of his power? Your circumstances are nothing to him. So there's nothing that is too hard. It wasn't that. This was his intention for this to happen in this way. It was his purpose, is the word that I would like to use, that it happened this way. So we said first that Jesus loves his friends, but then we said that even when Jesus loves his friends, sometimes love is hard to see. And in this, he gets glory through what we would see as something that is very negative. Now, there's all kinds of things in this chapter that we could unpack. One of my favorite sections before we go on to our next point is in kind of the middle of this, when Jesus says, I'm going to go. He waits 2 days, and the disciples at this point think Lazarus is just sick. They heard the message, and they know Jesus. They've been around Jesus long enough to know now that, and this is just my reading of it, that they know Jesus knows all things. And so they hear the message. They say, well, Lazarus probably just, it must be okay, because Jesus isn't in a hurry to go, and they think he's still alive. And so when we get to that part of this passage where Thomas, it's just a real interesting the way it happens just to me. When Jesus says that, well, we're going to go and we're going to now go and we're going to go back to Bethany and we're going to go see Lazarus. Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. And well, they didn't understand. They said, well, that's a good thing. If Lazarus was sick and now he's resting, that's a good thing for him. We're glad that he is now resting. They didn't really get what Jesus meant. And I love this, that what Jesus does next is he just makes it very plain, right? He says, Lazarus is dead. No mystery there. Lazarus is dead. And I'm glad for your sakes that I was not there. So not only was it for the sake of Mary and Martha and Lazarus that he waited 2 days, not only was it for the people who were there in Bethany that he waited 2 days, he said it was also for you, the disciples. He said, it's important for you that I waited 2 days. He said, I'm glad for your sake that I was not there, to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Isn't that amazing that he says, this is going to be good for you to believe? Well, do you think at this point that the disciples, that the 12, do you think they believe at this point? Yes, absolutely they believe. So it's not that they would become believers, it's that they would strengthen the belief that they have. He says, this is something that you need to see. This is something that needs to happen. And so I waited 2 days, and it's a good thing that I waited 2 days. It's hard to even read that. I'm glad for your sakes that I was not there. That sounds like a really harsh statement, doesn't it? I'm glad I was not there and that Lazarus died, so that it would be for your good. What a hard, it's just human, from human understanding, such a hard thing. But then in verse 16, and I didn't take a lot of detours in this. I wanted to really just kind of focus on the main points, but I have to here. Because Thomas, he gets a bad rap a lot of times, right? What do we know Thomas as? Thomas is doubting Thomas because of what happens after Jesus' death and resurrection. And the news begins to spread, and Thomas says, I'm not going to believe it until what? Until I put my finger in the nail and I put my hand in his side. And then when Jesus comes to him, what does he say? He says, go ahead. Go ahead, Thomas, and be believing. Don't be doubting. Be believing. And he says, my Lord and my God. So that's his perception. And if we just read this on surface value, it says Thomas, which is called Didymus. That just means he was a twin. He had a twin. We don't know anything about his twin. Unto his fellow disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. Now, why would he say that? Does he mean Lazarus? No, I don't think so. I think he means Jesus. What's happening here is Bethany is very close to Jerusalem. What happened at the end of chapter 10? Remember our study in chapter 10? All the events of chapter 10 take place, and the Jews are outraged, and they want to stone Jesus. And so they're wanting to kill Jesus. So they say, are you serious that you're going to go back? It says it in the text. We don't have to kind of read between the lines to get this. The apostles say, why in the world would you want to go back there? Because you know what's going to happen when you go back there. So this statement from Thomas, what courage, what bravery. He says, you know what? Let's go die with him. Let's go with him. He's going back. I'm going to go back too. Let's go and die with him. Then Jesus came, and next thing we see is that they are in Bethany. So that's going to lead us in to our next point. So we get then to this section, and our third point is a preview of victory over death. A preview of victory over death. So now Jesus has come to Bethany. He talked to Martha first, then Mary, and then he's brought to the tomb of Lazarus. It's interesting to me too, just as an aside, something I'd never really thought about in this before. He talks to Martha. Martha comes out to meet him, right? Not in the town, but she comes out to meet him. And then she goes back and tells Mary, but there's an interesting little side note about how she tells her, and I never noticed this before. She did it secretly. Did you ever notice that in the text? She goes back and she says secretly to Mary, Jesus is asking for you. You need to go to him. Well, why would she do that? Well, who has come out from Jerusalem to Bethany? A lot of the Jews. They have come out, and they're mourning there with this family, this Jewish family. They have come out. And so she says it secretly. She did not want everyone to hear Jesus is coming. Isn't that interesting little kind of side note there? So then Mary goes out, and they follow. They follow her, and they come out. But Mary goes out to meet Jesus. And something interesting about Mary, almost every time we see Mary, where do we find her? Where do we find Mary? Almost every time we see her in the Scriptures, at the feet of Jesus. She's always at his feet. And so she comes and she falls down at his feet there and in this narrative. So what we're going to have is all this takes place and they go to the tomb. And then at the tomb, Jesus is going to display what we said is a preview of victory over death. He's going to display just a very small sampling of the power that he will one day fully display when death is finally once and for all defeated. That is one aspect of this passage that I had never really thought about before, is the concept of in this passage, as Jesus approaches that tomb, have you ever had a nemesis in your life? You know, somebody that just kind of keeps coming up, and it's an enemy, and it's someone that you've just kind of, it's a battle and you've got to overcome. Like we would call it in a movie, a nemesis or a foe that just continues. Well, Jesus is approaching this tomb. This is a foe he's going to see again. It's a foe he's going to see again, and not too far in the distant future. And then again, one day, he will finally be put down, which we'll get to in a minute. But a foe can be a big part of your story, something or someone that has to be faced again and again and must be defeated to really move forward. So as Jesus approaches this tomb, can you imagine the activity in the spiritual world? Can you imagine what happened? What Satan thought when Jesus said, Lazarus, come forth. That would have sent shields down his spine. It would have just been, I mean, can you imagine? He's dead. And Jesus says, come forth. And he immediately comes forth from the tomb. It seems that even all the dark forces that would have known this was going on would have just been scared to death. That here Jesus exhibits that he has power over death. That he can speak the word and he that is dead can be made alive. So as Jesus approaches this tomb, and we know what's going to take place next, says he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. Now Matthew Henry states, and most people, you've heard me say this before, or Brother Nathan say this before, Matthew Henry states that the reason he prefaced the statement with Lazarus, come forth, is because if Jesus had just said, come forth, all the graves would have opened at once, all the dead, that would not have taxed his power at all for him to raise all the dead. And one day that's going to happen, by the way. But it didn't in this instance. So he is very specific, and he says, Lazarus, come forth. So Lazarus comes forth, bound hand and foot, and his face covered with a napkin. I mean, what an amazing scene. Let's not just kind of go through this passage and try to look at it theologically and pull all these things out of it without just appreciating the scene itself. Can you really imagine standing there as Jesus says, Lazarus, come forth, and this man comes out of the tomb, and he was dead. And not only dead, but he'd been dead 4 days. His body had already begun to decompose. That's not something we would love to think about. It's kind of gross a little bit, but his body had begun decomposing. His sister said, Lord, are you sure you want to move the stone? Because he stinks. He stinketh. All the other translations clean that up a little bit. King James just says, he stinketh, right? It just puts it in a blunt way. But that's important for us to understand. It was just more proof that Lazarus was really and truly dead. He was dead. And Jesus said, come forth, and he's made alive. What an amazing, amazing thing for all of these people to see. So he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. So we said that in that, you know, when he said that, it was just a small sampling. Why do we say a small sampling? Because one day, he's going to say, come forth again. He's going to say, arise. And all of the graves are going to be open. And all the dead are going to be raised. Those who are his children are going to be called up to be with him in there. What an amazing thing that is to think about. Go read in Thessalonians and just refresh your memory about what an amazing thing that's going to be. And also, and let's not skip over this, we said this is a foe that Jesus just is going to kind of see again and again. Well, in not too far from this time, in the Gospel of John, we're going to see what happens. And you know the story. Jesus is going to be arrested. He's going to be tried. Pilate's going to say, I find no fault in him. And yet, even though there is no fault in him, he's going to be crucified. And he's going to die. But that's not the end of the story. He's going to once again overcome death. And so that is what is such an important part of this story. So it's just the practical story itself. At this point, this is just a small taste then of his power over death. So because of that, when we see this, what this does for us as believers in Jesus Christ is it gives us hope, and it gives us the ability to not have to fear death, because our friend Jesus Christ has power over death. And he proves that here in an undoubted way, that Lazarus was dead. Everybody saw it. It was a fact. And then everybody saw that he said, Lazarus, come forth, and he came back from the dead. So that gives us hope then that our friend, our elder brother, Jesus Christ, our Savior, has power over death. And like we said, this is a small sampling. He's going to prove that even more when he himself then comes out of the grave. That is the real proof then. So this is just kind of, you know how when movies come out, they release the trailer? This is the trailer. This is the little preview. This is the little glimpse then. Our title of our message is A Glimpse of Divine Power. So he pulls back the curtain just a little bit, and he gives us a glimpse of the power that he is then going to display in his own resurrection, and then one day in the end of time, when he returns in a major way, when all the graves are open and all the dead will rise. So another interesting point about this before we move on, just the practical story itself, something we forget about here is that Lazarus is now living, right? We kind of end the story that Lazarus comes out of the tomb, but that's not it. Lazarus, who everyone knew in this town, who all of his family knew, had been dead for 4 days, and he's back. And it says that he became such a powerful witness of Jesus Christ that the same people who met together and said, we need to get rid of Jesus Christ, we need to kill him, now they want to kill Lazarus because he's such a powerful. I imagine his testimony was pretty powerful, right? He'd been dead for 4 days, and he's made alive again. And so he could tell people, Lazarus could say literally, I was dead, and yet Jesus made me alive again. What a powerful testimony that is. Well, you know what's interesting about that? Guess what your testimony is? Right. Guess what my testimony is? Right. I was dead, and yet Jesus has made me alive again. What a powerful thing. The spiritual death that we all experience, Jesus made me alive again. That's all of our testimony, not just Lazarus. But Lazarus could say it in a multiplicity of ways. Lazarus became a strong witness for Jesus Christ, so much so that they wanted to put him to death. Wouldn't you love to just talk to Lazarus? What was that like? I mean, what happened for those 4 days? I'd love to hear that story. What was it like to be dead and then to come back and live on the earth again and be able to talk to people? You know, there's in some of the parables that we read, some of the stories we read, said, oh, Lord, just let me go back and talk to my family one more time. Remember that story? He said, I want to go back. I want to tell them. And then they'll believe. No. Because you know why we know that that's true? Because of Lazarus. Because Lazarus came out of the tomb. Did everyone there believe? Is that what the text says? This is hard to understand. This is hard to understand. But no, believe it or not, they still didn't believe. There's a man who's dead in the tomb. He's been there for 4 days. Jesus says, Lazarus, come forth. He comes out of the tomb. And they say, I still don't believe. And they go to the Pharisees and say, guess what Jesus is doing? Can you imagine? Can you imagine that? Now, I can't imagine their conversation with the Pharisees. You know that heretic? The one that you don't like? The one who is claiming to be God? He just raised somebody from the dead. Y'all better hurry up and get him. I mean, what kind of conversation was that? So what that teaches us is that reason does not matter. It's not that we figure out that God is true, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. That's not the way that we come to knowledge of Jesus Christ. It is a supernatural thing that we must be given. Faith is something that we can't come up with. If you can't see this and have faith, then you just can't. Well, guess what? That's what the scripture teaches. That's what Jesus is showing us systematically here through John as we go through. You remember back in chapter 6, he fed the 5,000. You would think, like we said, you would think they would say, wow, amazing. No, he said, the reason you don't believe is because you're not of my sheep. You are not my children. That's the reason you don't believe. Even if one were to come back from the dead, you wouldn't believe it. Well, guess what? That comes true right here. Lazarus has come back from the dead. These people, if they want to, they can go to Lazarus' house. They can sit down at his table. They can talk to him. And many did. I mean, many did. And they sat down. In fact, we're going to see coming up, we already talked about it a little bit, in John chapter 12, there's going to be a supper. And Jesus is going to be there. And guess who sits at the table with Jesus and eats? Lazarus. He's there. And people could talk to him, and yet they don't believe. So that leads us into our last point. I started to make a promise there, and I'm not going to, because y'all know it's one of my favorite subjects. But when we look at this from a symbolic standpoint, and it is a very good symbol of regeneration and conversion. So our fourth point is that this is symbolic of regeneration and conversion. And just to put it in the simplest terms, when Jesus says, Lazarus, come forth, That's just exactly what happens in regeneration. When he says your name and he gives you spiritual life where there is nothing but spiritual deadness. Ephesians 2 said we are dead in trespasses and in sins. We are dead, spiritually dead. And so Jesus has to first make us alive. Before anything else can happen, we have to have life. So that's regeneration. Did Jesus walk up to that tomb and say, Mary, tell Lazarus to come forth? Or go in there and hit him on the forehead and he's going to come alive? No, not at all. He said, he spoke the words and Lazarus came back to life. There were no means used. He didn't use anyone else. He didn't use a preacher. He didn't use anything. He just said, Lazarus, come forth, and there was life where there was no life. It is the same with us in a spiritual sense. In regeneration, he speaks the word and we are made alive when we were not alive. Now, that's not the last part of the text, though. It also says, after Lazarus comes out of the grave, which you've heard me say this many times before too, but it's kind of a mystery to me the way it says it. He that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. He was wound up. Okay? So, I mean, very crude, once again, example, but just to get our minds in the right place. You've seen a mummy before, right? And how they wrap the body. So he's wrapped, and he also has a napkin over his face, and he's wrapped. So how did he even see to get out of the grave? How did he walk? Bound, hand and foot. How did he walk out of there? How did he come out? Well, I don't know. I can't explain that. I just know he came out. And it's the same way with you and I in regeneration. I might not can explain it and explain all the ins and outs of it, but I can promise you this. When Jesus says, come forth, you're coming forth. It's going to happen. And it never fails in every instance. So he comes forth bound hand and foot, but then Jesus saith unto them, loose him and let him go. Aren't you glad that that's part of the story? Wouldn't that be sad if Lazarus had to stay in the grave clothes for the rest of his life? What kind of existence would that be? Just bound hand and foot, napkin over your face, can't see anything, can't do anything? I don't believe that's how God operates. So not only does he call him out of the grave and give him life, but he tells someone, he doesn't do it himself, but he tells someone, go up there and loose him and let him go. Well, that's conversion. That's when we are made alive with that when we are made alive in regeneration, that we then understand it and we begin to exercise that new spiritual life that we have been given in regeneration. Really interesting thing that I had never thought of before on this whole thing as well is that it was interesting to me. I never thought about in this comparison, Jesus told him to move the stone. That's really interesting to me. He told him to move that out of the way because he knew what was about to happen. So he prepared everything ahead of time for what was about to happen. Isn't that interesting thought when you think about it in the spiritual application? Everything leading up to that point when Jesus is going to give life is taken care of. Jesus said, move that out of the way. Get that stone out of the way. He removed the obstacle and he gave life. And then he says, loose him and let him go. Lazarus comes forth out of the grave. So the amazing end to this story. Then in verses 45 and 46, which we've already talked about this a good bit. Many of the Jews which came to Mary and had seen the things which Jesus did believed on him. But some of them went their ways to the Pharisees and told them what things Jesus had done. So even in, after all of the things that we talked about this morning, some believed and some did not. It reminds me of Acts chapter 13, verse 48. And as many as were ordained to eternal life believed. Not because of the message itself, not because of the way it's presented, but because they're ordained to eternal life, they believed. And that's what I believe. And for us to understand that, that is the real true meaning of what salvation is. So here we got a glimpse of divine power in John chapter 11. I hope that will be a blessing to you this week. It gives us hope. It gives us courage to continue to face those things in our life, knowing that Jesus loves his friends. He loves his friends. Sometimes that love is hard to see, but he has power. He has power, and he can rescue us and pull us from anything that he sometimes chooses not to do so, and that's for God's glory and for our good.